Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And that's what we have in store for you today. A little soccer talk and some NBA as well. This past weekend, the USU Eastern men and women's soccer squads, they wrapped up the 2016 season. Both squads falling victim in the second round of the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Tournament. Coach Ammon Bennett will join us here in about 10 to 15 minutes. He'll talk a little bit about what went wrong and then also talk about the entire 2016 season. Third year of existence. And for the second straight year, the Lady Eagles climbed into the top 20 national rankings. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a bit. Also on the show today, Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com will join us. And the big topic of discussion will be Rudy Gobert and what the Utah Jazz made official yesterday. Gobert signed a four-year, $102 million contract that was first reported by Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical. According to the report, $90 million of that is guaranteed, and the rest of it based on incentives. Still, it seems like a lot of money, I know, but the Jazz have no choice. And that's just a run-of-the-mill contract now. Now, I look at another player who signed an extension yesterday, and that was Gorgui Dieng for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He signed a four-year, $64 million contract. That's a guy that the Jazz had. And they traded along with Shabazz Muhammad of Minnesota for Trey Burke. Looks like a horrible trade. Now, Trey Burke not doing well in Washington. Muhammad, he's given Minnesota some productive scoring. And Gorgui Dieng, I think he's a good ball player. I think he's got a great low post presence. That was a trade that the Jazz lost. But that's neither here nor there. At the end of the day, the Jazz had to lock up Rudy Gobert. $25 million a year for a guy his size with his ability. I think we continue to see him grow. He's still young. Now he knows he's staying put. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about Utah's game tonight. The Jazz will take on the San Antonio Spurs. For all the talk about the Golden State Warriors, hey, at the end of the day, San Antonio's unbeaten at 4-0. They haven't lost. And they beat Golden State by 29 points. So a tough game for the Utah Jazz. We'll talk about that tonight. Let's move over and talk some NFL football news. Percy Harvin. He is unretiring, and he's going to join the Buffalo Bills for the remainder of the season. Remember Percy Harvin? Super, uber talented kid out of Florida. And right now, the Bills, they are so thin at wide receiver that they lured him out of retirement. He's going to sign with the team again for the rest of the season. He's only 28 years old. He announced his retirement in April after ending last season on the IR. The Bills signed Harvin during the 2015 season. He played the first five games of last year before he was sidelined with the lingering hip and knee injuries. And that's kind of been the thing for Percy Harvin throughout his entire season. I thought that Percy Harvin was a very productive wideout, little inconsistent. He was big play. He was feast or famine. But he said that his body just was not allowing him to play at the level that he wanted to. Doug Whaley told WGR 550 today that Jim Overdorff floated the idea of re-signing Harvin. The team approached him about 2 weeks ago with the idea of returning. I don't know what you can expect from Percy Harvin. Probably not a lot for you fantasy football owners. And I love fantasy football. We don't talk about it a whole lot on the show, but I love fantasy football. Don't rush out and sign this guy. There's way too many other guys in the waiver wire that you need to put ahead of Percy Harvin. I don't know what exactly his role is going to be with on this team. I think he just adds some sort of depth. he might see the field this week. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of Percy Harvin coming back. He's 28 years old, and again, he has athletic ability, but injuries have really taken their toll. Let's talk NBA once again. The Oklahoma City Thunder have acquired Jeremy Grant from the 76ers for Ersan Ilyasova and a draft pick. That's a conditional first-round draft pick. Grant averaged 9.7 and 4 rebounds a game for the Sixers last year, played in 2 games this season. Before the trade, Ilyasova, he's averaged 5 points and 5 boards for the Thunder this year. Played for Orlando, Detroit, and Milwaukee the previous 3 seasons. It's a unique deal. I don't know how much of an impact this will have. The Thunder are going to send a first-round pick in 2020 unless that selection falls within the top 20. In that case, Oklahoma would send a second overall pick in 2022 and 2023. So some weird things happening today as far as moves. Percy Harvin coming out of retirement, under-the-radar move for the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was the NFL trade deadline as well today, and there were a couple of moves. I don't know if there was anything major. We talked about New England yesterday sending Jamie Collins over to Cleveland. Outside of that, some minor moves. I know the Detroit Lions made a move earlier this season, but the Giants, Dan Pat, the Eagles did not make a move for a wide receiver either. That was one of the teams that I thought would maybe try to do something. Sheldon Richardson, there was a lot of trade talk. He's still a Jet. The deadline passed without a trade. Lots of talk, little action. Joe Thomas also stays in Cleveland. Joe Staley still in San Francisco. And so as most NFL trade deadlines move and go, little movement. So that's a quick recap of everything that's happening in the national sports scene. And again, you can't forget about tonight, Major League Baseball. Potentially, the season comes to a close. Cleveland with a chance to end the year. 6 p.m. start time tonight. They hold a 3-2 lead right now over the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs stay alive with a Game 5 win. And again, I think hope is circulating around that Chicago Cub dugout at this moment. You can never count this team out. Tonight, Jake Arrieta is going to be on the hill. And for Cleveland, you'll get a look at Tomlin, who has yet to start a game so far, or at least log a quality start so far in this series. He's got a 4.4 ERA. Josh Tomlin taking the hill tonight for the Cleveland Indians. That's a rundown of everything that's happening right now in the national sports scene. We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll give you the local sports recap. Again, Coach Ammon Bennett and Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com joining us here on the show today. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The USU Eastern men's basketball team has their new season off and rolling as they have now completed 2 weekends of scrimmage play, gearing up for this weekend as they will travel to Casper, Wyoming on Thursday for a matchup with Central Wyoming on Friday and Casper on Saturday. The 2016-17 season for USU Eastern will look a lot different. The team has a new assistant coach, as Scott Fields has joined the staff permanently, while only one returner off of last year's team is on this year's roster, and that's center Alex Morrell. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Aljama Pacelli, also known as Coach Vando, entering his 5th season as head coach. He talked about the team so far this season.
You know, it's been a big challenge because this year we brought 7 international kids. So it's 7 different languages and 7 different cultures. It's been a challenge, but you know, but so far they've been great. They've been working together. They're bond really, really, really well. They like each other on and off the court.
The first weekend of actual play will be a tough one for the Eagles. They'll meet up with, again, Central Wyoming on Friday before taking on Casper, who is ranked in the top 25 on Saturday.
That's a good test for this team. You know, it's a ranked team on their home floor. We are hungry for, you know, everybody excited. You know, they think that, you know, we think that we can go over there and win the next 2 games.
Following this weekend's set of games, the team will travel to Arizona for a 4-game road trip. This year's team continues to run some ball screen motion offense, while a 2-3 zone and man-to-man defensively. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the USU Eastern basketball squad in the coming weeks, and we'll also catch up with Chelsea Warburton, head coach of the Lady Eagles squad. We stick with USU Eastern Athletics, and over the weekend, the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Tournament took place for soccer, in which the men and women squads both lost in the second round, both lost by shutout fashion. The women fell to Salt Lake by a final score of 1-0, while the men dropped to Southern Nevada by a final score of 3-0. We will put the final touches on the 2016 season today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports as we catch up with head coach Ammon Bennett. He'll talk about both teams' losses. Coming up this Friday, it'll begin the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship for the volleyball season, and USU Eastern will go toe-to-toe with Southern Nevada in the 4-5 matchup, looking to extend their season later on in the day against the College of Southern Idaho. Under first-year head coach Danielle Jensen, the Lady Golden Eagles finished fourth with a record of 4-6, so they'll have a favorable matchup with Southern Nevada, who finished 2-8. The other first-round matchup will include Snow College, who was 6-4, and Colorado Northwestern, who was 1-9. We'll have more on the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Volleyball Tournament in the coming days. The Utah Jazz will look to improve their 1-2 record tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM as they travel on the road to meet the San Antonio Spurs at 6:30 PM. The Jazz are 1-2, suffering losses to Portland and the Clippers so far this season, while their lone win is coming home against the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, while the Jazz will head to San Antonio tonight, big man Rudy Gobert is a very rich man following his contract extension last night before the midnight deadline. The Jazz and Gobert agreed to a 4-year, $102 million contract, and Rudy Gobert tweeted out 4 more years as he was signing the paperwork. That's been a look at sports in the local Castle Country area. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Time for another edition of the Coach's Corner. We continue to wrap up the fall sports season here in the Castle Country. The USU Eastern soccer squads, both seasons came to an end this past weekend, both teams losing in the second round of the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Tournament. The women falling to Salt Lake 1-0, while the men lost to Southern Nevada 3-0. Joining us over the phone right now to talk a bit about this past weekend's matchups and to recap the entire season, we have Coach Ammon Bennett. Coach, it is always great to get you on. Appreciate the time again.
Yeah, you bet.
We'll dive right into it, Coach. First off, let's talk about the women. They suffer a 1-0 loss. This is really a tough one to swallow. You and I talked about going into this particular game, how going up against Salt Lake, a team where in three previous matchups, you lost one, won one, and tied. So it was as even as it could possibly get going into the conference tournament to kind of break that 1-1-1 three-game set.
Yeah, you know, we even talked to the team before the game, and we said, listen, it's going to be a one-goal game. We didn't see either team being able to score by two. By, you know, if you're up 2-0, you're definitely going to win that game. And so, you know, we made the right adjustments. We had felt like in some of the previous games that we would start off a little slow, which would allow Salt Lake to get a little bit of momentum. But they really didn't have very many chances by the first half. It was pretty evenly played. It was 0-0 at half, and we felt pretty confident that we're a team that usually has pretty good depth and pretty good endurance, and we kind of wear teams down. But in the end, they were able to put one in about 10 minutes into the second half off of a set piece, which again we felt like that's where they're going to score on us if they do. We didn't feel like they were going to be able to generate an offensive run. There would be a foul or a corner kick that would be their best opportunity to score, and that's how they scored on us.
Well, that being said, when you fall down 1-0 in a game that you anticipated being a one goal game, did you immediately sense some panic, or did you see a little bit more urgency? I mean, what was the vibe like once Salt Lake scored that first goal?
You know, there was enough energy. We felt like the girls were still felt pretty confident. We didn't change a formation. We didn't change attitude. You know, the next 10 minutes, we felt like we took over. We had a couple of set pieces that about 25 yards out, and they weren't good for us. We had some corner kicks. We didn't execute on the end of some set pieces, but we generated it enough in there to be able to equalize it. We didn't change our really a formation or thought process until about the last got under 10 minutes when we started pressing up one of our backs, because it's like, hey, you're either going to equalize it or you're going to lose 2-0. You got to do anything you can to try to equalize the game and push it into overtime or beyond losing 1-0. So, we had some really good opportunities. In the last 5 minutes, we felt like the referees missed a couple of crucial calls. It happens in games. We felt like there was a couple of handballs on the Salt Lake squad that the referees missed, which would have resulted in a couple of penalty kick opportunities. You know, there's no guarantee you're going to make those. But, you know, we did the right things. It's just unfortunate when you're playing a good team. You know, you're not going to get great opportunities, but when you get them, you got to put it away. And they did, and we didn't.
And then you guys immediately had to, you had to take the field once again right after that with the men's squad. They go up against Southern Nevada. That's a good team there as well. Unfortunately, again, shutout loss this time, 3-0. In comparison, were these games at all comparable, Coach?
For the men's and women's teams?
Yeah.
No, not a whole lot. I mean, there's a different, little bit different thought process, a little bit different formation. The men's team, soccer is such an opportunistic game. At halftime on the men's side, there were 11 shots that each team took, and 4 of them were on goal on each side. And each team, we had 3 corner kicks to their 2. So statistically, a dead heat. We had our 4 shots on goal, for us were inside the 18, and their 4 shots, only 1 was in the 18, and they put it away. So if we had put our 4 away to their 1, heck, I'll take a 4-1 halftime lead all day long. That's sometimes the brutality of soccer. You can do everything right, but it's that last 10 yards, put the ball past the goalkeeper, put in the goal. Their goalkeeper had to make some good saves. I wouldn't say fantastic saves, but our shot was kind of right at him. But very high pace. We had the right game plan for the first half. We outplayed them. We outpressed them. We didn't have to outpossess them, but we were getting the better opportunities to score. And again, if we put our opportunities in, the game changes. Second half, they made the right adjustments. They were able to squeak one in right underneath the armpit of our goalkeeper on the ground. That, you know, you're watching this ball going, oh, he's got it. Oh, what? How did that get underneath him? And they go up 2-0, and then that kind of was the end of it. But a very good quality CSN team, very aggressive, challenges you hard. We had beaten them at home 3-1 a couple weeks ago. They'd beaten us 2 other times, so we weren't unconfident. But a couple of injuries really changed a little bit how we played, and we ran out a little bit of steam with a couple of backup players out there. So,
again, our guest right now is Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Soccer Squads. Coach, we'll flip back over to the girls' side of the field. As far as the expectations and the goals at the beginning of the season, I know last week we talked a lot about injuries for this team. Is it still disappointing to not log a win in the conference tournament?
Oh yeah, it's always disappointing in that way, but it's not as disappointing in my mind if we were healthy, if we had everybody there. Our girls played as hard as they could. We had some girls out there still trying to play through some injuries that, you know, they played a lot of minutes, but they weren't quite the same player. They weren't quite as fluid and as dynamic as you want. I would be more disappointed had we been healthy and had we played our best and lost in a really unlucky fashion. We got scored on. We gave up a goal, and that's Salt Lake's credit. But Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the year with the expectations and knowing what was available with the squad when we were healthy, really felt like we were a national caliber team. Again, we were ranked, which doesn't mean anything, but as soon as we started getting injured, we became vulnerable. And hats off to the other teams for taking advantage of that.
Flip side to the men, I know that it's such a competitive league. I mean, really, really a competitive league. And as you and I were talking about last week, you said it doesn't shock you that schools here in the state of Utah are as competitive as they are, only 1 year into their existence based on the talent here in the state of Utah. You knew it was going to be a difficult season for the men. I remember talking to you at the beginning of the season. You knew that things had to break right for you guys to have an overall successful season.
Yeah, and we ended up 8-6-3. Three double overtime ties, which, a bounce here, a bounce there, those could have been wins. So that gives us, gives you 11 wins on the year. Of the five losses, three of those were one goal. We were very competitive. Salt Lake men who ended up winning the league, nobody else in the league played them as close as we did. A 1-1 double overtime tie, a 1-0 double overtime loss. We lost them twice by one goal. Salt Lake goes into the tournament as the number one seed, and they lost to Snow 3-3 in a shootout. CSN, who beat us, they had to score five goals to beat Snow College the next day, and we'd beaten Snow both times. So it was extremely competitive. Could have gone either way. It came down a lot to who's going to make the fewest amount of mistakes, who's going to be healthy, who's going to execute their thought process just a little bit better. And unfortunately for us, a couple injuries and some unlucky bounces. Our leading goal scorer and point getter, Fabio, has the ball, on the 6-yard line to score twice, and doesn't quite get it wide enough for the keeper, who gets a touch on the ball to send it away. Either one of those go in, and the game's either equalized or we're up 2-1, and who knows where it goes from there.
With all this being said, Coach, as we recap, the 2016 season, what's the future look like for both programs?
Well, the girls were probably 90% freshmen. So, if we get that core group back and we fill in some holes that we'll leave, I think the girls team is still poised to be very, very good. They were 13-3-3 this year. The guys were 8-6-2. Again, really good core groups that are freshmen that came in. We don't have to recruit a lot of new players, but we do have to recruit some key positions to move us forward, as you got to do every year.
Coach, once again, congratulations on putting together a very competitive season. I mean, I can't believe we're now 3 years deep into this USU Eastern program already. Have you enjoyed your time here in Price?
Oh yeah, love the area. I probably have enjoyed coaching here as more so than anywhere else I've been, and I've been fortunate as a coach to be able to be successful. I have great players that come and play for me, and really good community support here. We've been able to get players from any corner of the state of Utah to come and play for us, and so very, very blessed, very honored to be here. I've really, really enjoyed time, and they finally broke ground on new soccer fields up there above the BDAC, so that's going to be an exciting time for next year to have some new fields up there on the old Durant property, which will really be a good recruiting tool for us.
Definitely. Well, Coach, again, I definitely do appreciate you taking out the time. It was great to talk to you. Great to always keep up on the soccer team. Hopefully we'll talk again real soon.
Very good. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Soccer Squads putting the final touches on the 2016 season. We're going to break for just a minute tonight here on KOAL. The Utah Jazz are back in action. They travel on the road to take on the unbeaten San Antonio Spurs. We'll catch up with Jamison Welsh, great friend of the show who covers the NBA throughout the entire country. We'll talk Rudy Gobert and his brand new contract as well. That's coming up next.
The Toronto Raptors select. DeMar DeRozan from the University of Southern California.
And gets that to go. What a game DeRozan's having. He's got 29.
DeMar DeRozan, the Toronto Raptors. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscaglini.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We're going to continue talking some NBA basketball again tonight. The Utah Jazz make the return to KOAL. They take on the San Antonio Spurs at 6:30. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. As it stands right now, the Utah Jazz 1-2 so far this season. Their lone win coming against the Lakers. San Antonio on the flip side, they haven't lost yet. They're a perfect 4-0. Three of those four wins coming on the road. Joining us to talk some Utah Jazz and other news and notes around the league, we have Jamison Walsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jamison, always look forward to our conversations. Thank you.
No problem, Jordan. Thanks for having me as always, man. Definitely appreciate it.
I want to start by talking about Rudy Gobert. Last night, the Utah Jazz made him a very rich man. You talk about a Halloween candy haul. Rudy Gobert gets 4 years, $102 million. A lot of people would shake their head at that. Bottom line is, this is a new era in the NBA. Contracts are spiking. You and I were talking off of the cuff. Mid-level exception right now is about $10 million. When you consider that, the Jazz did exactly what they had to do with Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, they had to do it. Is Rudy Gobert a $100 million player normally? Probably not. But with the new system and the money going around, you got to do it because somebody would have took that chance. Someone around the league would have paid him eventually. So you got to take that chance. You got to keep your own guys. And you got to hope he gets better and develops into that franchise-type player, that $100 million player. So the Jazz did what they had to do, and it's a good move. It quiets a lot of whispers around the league and whatnot. Also, it allows you to have a foundation of your team. You know who's going to be on your team going forward. So it's a good deal for the Jazz. It's pricey. It's definitely pricey. He probably becomes the highest paid Jazz ever, if I'm not mistaken. That has to be the biggest Jazz contract ever.
Yeah,
making $25 million a year, which is kind of wild when you think about it. But yeah, it's a good deal. You just got to hope that Rudy Rudy improves and becomes a guy that comes close to an all-star, because he has all-star potential. You've got to hope he gets to that level.
You know, you look at this Jazz team, and I think the Jazz are one example. A lot of small market teams, when the latest CBA was put in effect, I know there was emphasis on kind of trying to slow player movement, especially big name players, because you had small market owners complaining that large markets had deeper pockets and players wanted to play in larger markets because of shoe contracts and everything else. So they put in an idea. They put in loopholes that allow teams to keep their own players. And Jamison, from the beginning, I thought this is still not going to work because you have teams that don't want to spend money. I always use the Maloofs as an example. They did not want to spend money. That's not the case anymore. I mean, I'm seeing small market teams now dishing out bucks to keep players.
Well, all right, the whole thing about not spending money, teams are, of course, they don't want to spend money if they don't have to. A lot of teams, a lot of owners, they may say they want to win, but they really didn't want to win. You know, it sounds good when you say you want to do whatever it takes to win, but a lot of owners didn't do what they had to. I mean, let's go to the Oklahoma City situation. They had one of the best situations in years where you had four young guys, not even in their primes yet, and they were too cheap to pay one of those guys $7 million extra. So, I mean, that tells you all you need to hear about that. Nowadays, it's a little bit different. The basketball money is so huge with the new TV deal. It's a lot more easier for the owners to cut that check because they know how much they're getting and whatnot. But, yeah, it's definitely a different era for sure. Like you mentioned earlier, it's definitely a different era. But the new TV money makes it a lot easier for these owners to cut the check because they're making more money than they've ever made in the NBA before. So each side is happy. So that's why we're probably not going to have a lockout for a very long time, because you have players making so much money. They don't care about the BRI, the basketball-related income. They don't care about that because they're making more money than they've ever made before. So why potentially mess that up when you have a good thing going. So, yeah, it's an interesting situation for sure. But right now you have a situation where both sides are happy, and you're going to keep on seeing the numbers go up. I believe this summer the numbers are going to even go up even more due to the BRI and the TV deal increase. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out even further.
Cody Zeller gets a four-year, $56 million deal last night. Also getting a contract was Gorgui Dieng. He gets a four-year, $64 million deal. I like to talk about Gorgui Dieng because he and Shabazz Muhammad were two players that the Jazz moved in order to get Trey Burke. And obviously, Trey Burke no longer a member of the team. He is now in Washington. Jameson, when you look at what Dieng got and you look at what Rudy Gobert got, is there that much of a difference between those two players? Because I don't see it.
There's not $35 million difference with the guys. They're not. I mean, if you had Gorgui Dieng and replaced Rudy Gobert, there's not much drop-off at all. And you're actually better offensively. But defensively, they're not that far apart. They're not $35 million far apart. But at the same time, hell, you could have both those guys. Imagine if you have both those guys on your team. Like, imagine if you had both of those guys on your squad. Like, if Gorgui Dieng was the backup center and played 20 minutes a night, you had Rudy Gobert and allow him to squat for everything, like, you would be in a really good shape. And Shabazz Muhammad, we all know that Jazz have had problems scoring. You know, they've had issues scoring and getting buckets when they needed them the most. And having a guy like Shabazz Muhammad that can get you 15 any night, you know, he can get you 15, even 20 any night, that hurts. You know, that hurts when you let that go for a guy that might not be in the league next year. You know, Trey Burke's a guy that it's not looking too good with this situation because he's just not a guy that people need. He's an undersized scoring point guard that doesn't shoot that well. So when that's the case, you don't defend well, your chances in the league aren't that great. It just doesn't work out that way.
Jameson Welsh, our guest right now from BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Tonight, the Utah Jazz take on the San Antonio Spurs right here on KOAL. San Antonio, a perfect 4-0. They've played really good basketball, again, winning three out of their first four on the road, while the Jazz are sitting at 1-2. Jazz still a little banged up, slowly getting more and more healthy. But Jameson, I mean, the big topic is San Antonio. This is a team that knocked off Miami. They've knocked off New Orleans, Sacramento, and, of course, Golden State. San Antonio's looked pretty good. Kawhi Leonard's looked really good.
Well, Kawhi Leonard's been looking good for the last 3 years. A lot of people, don't like, they've had their issues with him because, he doesn't do enough on the offensive end, or he doesn't create his own shot, or he doesn't do this, doesn't do that. They've always found a way to kind of discourage his game. Well, the guy keeps on getting better every year. Like, the guy, every summer, he works on something and comes back and improves. He's always a better player every offseason, becomes a better player, for the new season. So you got to respect that. Now he has a nice little jumper off the bounce now, and that's something we haven't seen. And now with that being at 6'8", with that makes you almost unstoppable because he can do pretty much anything on the court right now. Kawhi Leonard is the leader on both ends of that team. LaMarcus Aldridge is a very good number two guy. After that, everybody else kind of falls in place. They still have a lot of veterans that don't mind certain roles that they have, so they're in very good shape going forward. Personally, I think the Spurs are going to be right there at the end. I think for the Spurs, it's going to be imperative that they try to go for the number one spot in the West, because if they go for the number one spot in the West, they avoid having to beat the Warriors and Clippers. I still think with their roster, I still think they're a better regular season team than a postseason team. So if they can avoid having to beat both of those teams, especially having to do one without home court advantage, it'd be beneficial to them. But it's going to be very difficult for them to beat the Clippers and Warriors to get to the finals. I don't think they have enough. Even though they're a very good team, I don't think they have enough in their tank to do that. But I'm not going to count them out. I tell you that. We've counted them out how many times since 2009? And they always prove everyone wrong. So I'm not counting them out until they're officially done. But no, they're very impressive. They're well coached. They have guys like Patty Mills and Jonathan Simmons, and just a lot of guys coming out of nowhere just playing really well and knowing their role and accepting their role very well. And it's very impressive. Whenever you have a team that guys just play, do what the coach asks them to do, and they excel in that, it's always very impressive when you see that.
The Minnesota Timberwolves, we'll move on and talk about them. They're still winless. They're 0-2. They return to the court tonight. They take on the Memphis Grizzlies at home. That's a team that they lost to already 102-98 earlier this season. A lot of people were very high on Minnesota, and throughout the offseason, I said that was the job that every coach wanted because they're in such a good situation. You have that guy in Andrew Wiggins that I believe is that next-tier superstar. You're going to see that in the coming years. I think he's a legitimate MVP candidate. You look at Karl Anthony Towns, he put up Shaq-type rookie numbers, which is something we haven't seen since 92, 91. So they're in a very good situation, yet Ricky Rubio is now out indefinitely with a sprained elbow, and they're 0-2, Jameson. I mean, is it something that maybe we put too much stock in Minnesota this particular season under Tom Thibodeau?
No, I don't think so. They're a young team, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the game they were up over 15 points in each game. So they're just a young team that just can't close out games, and that's part of the process of having a young team. That's part of what happens is, you know, young teams struggle to close out opponents and deal with big leads. It does happen. They're still finding themselves, and of course, Rubio's out. Chris Dunn. I wasn't that high on Chris Dunn. A lot of people were saying, "Oh, Chris Dunn's this, Chris Dunn's that." Very good college player, but I don't think he's just going to come in the league and just run the point and lead the T-Wolves to a fifth seed. I didn't think that was going to happen. And you had people talking reckless over the summer because he had a really good summer league. You know, the NBA is a way, way, way different story. But that being said, they're still learning. They're still learning. They're still going through growing pains and whatnot. You have a lot of young players that are still trying to – even Wiggins. Wiggins is a guy that's still trying to figure out how good he is. As crazy as that sounds, he's in his third year. He's trying to figure out how good he is and what he is as a player. So it's a lot of moving parts, moving pieces. They'll figure it out. They'll get better. But with that being said, you got to close out teams. If you're up 15 in the second half, you got to find ways to win those games. You cannot lose games when you're up that much. So we'll definitely see going forward. But T-Wolves, I wouldn't worry too much. I really wouldn't. But hey, you draft Chris Dunn at number 5, and he had all the hype coming in from college. Let's see what he can do.
Right.
If he's really that good, the T-Wolves are okay. If he's not, you're in trouble because you need a point guard, or you got to get real crazy and put Levine at the one and just go from there, because you don't want to get to a situation where you have a young team and there's a lot of hype, but you start regressing. You don't want that. You got to keep that positive momentum going, especially when you're paying a coach and GM $11 million a year. You really can't afford any regressing when you have that kind of figure out there. You need to make the playoff run happen, especially in this Western Conference, because after the first three teams in the West, and I'll throw the Clippers in that top three in the West, from 4 to about 12 or 13 in the West, it's wide open. Like, nothing outside of New Orleans making the playoffs would really shock me, because New Orleans is just bad overall. If the Lakers made the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me. Phoenix would shock me, because they're not good. But there's not a whole lot that would shock me in the West right now. There really isn't, because there's so many teams that would just be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, they had a good season. That's how they made it, blah, blah, blah. Outside of that, like, the Kings making the playoffs wouldn't shock me. Like, that's just how it is. Like, the Kings played the Hawks tight last night in Atlanta, which usually doesn't happen that often. So it's a lot different in the West this year. It really is. So Minnesota, there's really not a whole lot of excuses for them missing the playoffs this year.
Let me tell you one thing that has shocked me. That's Chicago scoring over 100 points in all three of their first three games. That's shocking, because I thought that was the worst backcourt scoring team in the NBA, and they've gone over 100 points all three games so far this season. And they've knocked off Boston twice and Indiana once. So Chicago has three rather impressive wins for the Eastern Conference.
Well, the thing about them is they have talent. Like, in the NBA, if you have talent and the talent kind of figures itself out in terms of how to work with each other, you're in good shape. I think Fred Hoiberg, he wants offensive talent. Like, he's an offensive-minded coach. He'll find a way to make things work if he has the talent and pieces. And also, he has motivated veterans, which is always a key thing. He has guys like Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo who are trying to prove themselves. As crazy as that sounds, both guys have done a lot of great things in this league, but they're still trying to prove themselves. And right now, they're in a good situation, because people really thought, I mean, Miami Heat didn't think Dwayne Wade was worth $20 million. Rajon Rondo was really a stop or two away from being out of the league. So there's a lot to prove for those two guys. They can still play. They still have juice in them. So it's not like they're on their last leg. And, of course, you have Jimmy Butler, who's, you know, a very wonderful player at his stage of his career. So you got a pretty good top three, and then you have some good supporting pieces in Miritic and McDermott that can shoot the three, which the top three guys can't do that well. So you have a pretty good mixture. I like Brook Lopez. He's the underrated guy. He's the dirty work guy because you can do a lot of stuff defensively, and he can erase a lot of mistakes on that end. So you can play very aggressive on the perimeter, and he can rebound and block shots. So they're in a good situation. Chicago has a pretty good thing. I know it's still early. I want to see, of course, when they go through a little losing streak and whatnot. But you got to give kudos for Fred Hoiberg for letting guys just play and not allowing him to get in the way, in a sense. Because when you have veterans like that, it's very easy for them to butt heads with the coach. But from what I've seen thus far, he's just letting those guys play and doing what they do best. And that's what it's about.
Again, Jameson Welsh, I believe the hypenba.com. Jameson, it's always great to get you on the show. Thank you for the time, and I know we'll talk again next week.
Oh, not a problem, man. Thanks for having me, as always. And we got to talk boxing one of these days. We got a couple of big fights coming up. We got to talk boxing and some of these things that are going on soon as well.
Next week, let's talk some boxing. How's that sound?
All right, that works, man. That works.
All right, we're going to pause for just a second. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.
Hi, this is Jason Kidd. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Bescarini, KOAL, 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, set to put the final touches on this edition of the show. I'm your host, Jordan Bescarini. Tonight, Game 6 of the World Series. And even though the series shifts back to Cleveland tonight, if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, I don't think you're panicked yet. The Cubs can win the next two games on the road. If they do, they'd win the first World Series for the team since 1908. It would make it three straight wins. They won three straight 17 or more times this regular season. They did it against the Dodgers when they were down 2-1. This team has been on the brink several times this year. They lose what would have been a game four to the Dodgers, and they're in serious trouble. They come out, they fire on all cylinders. They lose game four to the Giants. I think they're in serious trouble. And they found a way, creating a collapse from the San Francisco Giants in the ninth inning. So, again, anytime this team has been tested, they have performed quite well. One thing that you have bowing in your favor if you are a Chicago Cubs fan tonight, you have Jake Arrieta on the mound. No hitter going into the sixth inning of game two. He goes up against Josh Tomlin, the Indians' fifth starter in the regular season. This bodes well for the Cubbies tonight. If it goes to a Game 7, Kyle Hendricks will go up against Corey Kluber. I like Cleveland's chances a little bit more in Game 7, especially with them being the home team. The Indian starters are working on 3 days rest for Kluber. It'd be his third start in 9 days. Look, it's not out of the question. Chicago's not out of this series yet. I do believe they could get a win tonight. If they get a win tonight, all bets are off. Now, we're going to talk more Major League Baseball tomorrow. We'll either be talking about a Game 7, or we'll be talking about the Cleveland Indians getting their victory tomorrow when we have Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, join us on the show to talk about the season in general, or maybe Game 7. Like I said, we'll know a little bit more tonight. But start time in tonight's contest is set for 6 p.m. Cubs-Indians, Game 6. It's been fun having these two teams go at it back and forth. Again, someone's looking to get off the schneid as far as the World Series championship goes. Again, start time tonight, 6 p.m. That's Game 6 of the World Series. Plenty of NBA basketball tonight as well. Do not forget the Utah Jazz coming up here tonight, 6:30 start time. Other games in the NBA right now, actually, we have Houston and Cleveland going toe-to-toe. That was an early start. Going into the second quarter, Houston clinging to a one-point advantage there. 5 o'clock tip-offs tonight, Orlando at Philly. We get the Lakers at Indiana, Sacramento at Miami, and New York at Detroit. Two games in the 6 o'clock hour outside of the Jazz. That's Milwaukee and New Orleans, Memphis at Minnesota. Nightcap tonight, Golden State and Portland. The Warriors looking for their third straight win. Utah Jazz, San Antonio Spurs tonight, 6 p.m. The Spurs still unbeaten, and the Jazz looking just to find their rhythm offensively. Coming off a horrible showing, 72 points. And that loss to the Clippers, we'll see if the Jazz can get back on it. On the show tomorrow, we're going to talk to Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans. He'll join us to talk about the entire 2016 season, his first year as head coach, and then we'll also catch up again with Bill Lasky. We're either talking an Indians World Series championship or Game 7. Thank you again for joining me. I have to thank Coach Ammon Bennett and, of course, Jameson Welsh for taking out the time to join us. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 to 5. Do not forget to check out CastleCountryRadio.com. Click on the Drive Time Sports link. Archive shows, and you can also visit the Coach's Corner or listen to complete Drive Time Sports shows, whatever you choose. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.